If you make personal projects, post them online, post them on LinkedIn. Even if you don't get many likes in the beginning or there's not much of a reaction, you never know who is going to see it. I wasn't actively looking for a game job, but Blizzard find me because I was posting my work. So you never know what's going to come up.
You're listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. CG Spectrum College of Digital Art and Animation offers specialized career training for the film and game sector. Join our hosts, Career Development Manager Maxine Schnepp and CGS Mentor Justin Mulman, as they chat with industry experts doing cutting-edge work in film and games. Now, on to the show.
Hey, Justin. This week, I talked to Chunchun Yang. She is a senior texture artist at Blizzard. She also worked at studios like ILM, Digital Domain, Sony Imageworks, and Prime Focus. She is also a CGS 3D modeling mentor, which is pretty cool. She's one of us. Chunchun has also been working in the industry for over a decade, and her specialty is photorealistic film modeling and especially texturing. We talk about a bunch of stuff. Difference between working in film and games. She's done both. A lot about career growth and personal growth. Really excited for you to check this out.
Yeah, sign me up.
Growing up, I always just like art. It was just very clear that I was more on the artistic side. When I was supposed to do my math work, I was like drawing on my on my math book. My mom would walk in when I was supposed to be doing my homework and I was drawing. I had to hide it like under the table and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that.
With a Chinese family, they always just kind of expect you to go for either, there's only three options, you know, business, law, or medicine. So my mom was in business, so I was doing that up until I was like 20 when I was in college. My mom actually passed away at that time. So after that, I have like no motivation to keep doing that kind of business college stuff. I was just doing it for her, really. So I kind of completely lost motivation. And after that, I just like, I have to do kind of something I'm passionate about. So that's when I went to Vancouver Film School. But at the time, I actually don't know what I wanted to do. I know I like art, like I'm a huge anime fan and all that stuff, but I don't know exactly which one I want to go for. So I took like foundation class, I took 2D animation class, but didn't result in anything because I wasn't sure I wanted to do. And I tried 2D animation and it wasn't for me. So after that, I was actually started kind of just working like sushi restaurants because yeah, I had no money at that point. And
you need to pay rent, right? It's a very normal thing.
And at that point, I realized there's a magazine called Image Effects. I don't know if they're still around.
Yeah.
But they were publishing all that concept art. It's more concept art focused. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, this is something I'm more into. I kind of rather polish one artwork to a good quality than kind of like animation. You kind of just draw a lot of drawings too. So it's kind of different. And I feel like that was more for me. It's more about details, more about the whole look of everything. So I actually started kind of learn how to paint on my free time when I was working in restaurants. But eventually I got an opportunity to kind of go to do school again. And I realized I was talking to some people, just trying to connect, network with people in the concept art industry. And they were saying that, well, if you want to get into art, maybe 3D is a better option because there's just so little needs for concept artists compared to how many 3D artists you're going to have to hire for a project. You might need like three or four concept artists, but you're going to need an army of 3D artists to do a 3D project. Mm. So if you want to get in, that's probably a little bit easier entry. You can always maybe transition to concept art later. So that's why I chose 3D animation school at VFS in Vancouver. And and after that, finally, I was like 25, 26 at that point. And I finally started my career.
I mean, it's funny because at the time, that probably felt so old. Like, being 25, 26, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so old.
I was definitely the older ones in my class, and I have a big class. So,
But did you find that because you were, and again, 25 is so not old as we know now. But I know that you felt old at the time. Did you feel like you maybe took things a little bit more seriously compared to some of your classmates because you were like, this is it now? Like,
definitely.
I've done this before, it didn't work, now is my second chance.
Yeah, definitely, because I have a lot of classmates, not just my classmates in general, we always have kids right out of high school in our program. Mm. And I think the failure rate for those kids are much higher. because they're a little like the me the first time around. They don't know really what they're getting themselves into. They don't know if they're going to like it. So it's harder to stick it out. But for me at that point, just like, I have to get a job. So there's no option, no other option. So definitely I'm taking it way more seriously.
Yeah, especially if, like, you know, this is your money that you've saved.
It's expensive. This kind of school is not cheap.
It's not cheap, and it's not easy either. You know, like, to actually do a really good job. It's not easy to make a good portfolio. And I mean, I think yours showcases that. I know most of this work was done later in your portfolio, you know, once you started working. But yeah, it's definitely not easy. So tell me a little bit more about texturing itself, just because some of the listeners or viewers might not really understand. People are aware of 3D modeling, but tell me a little bit more about texturing and maybe how your background kind of made you gravitate towards that, because you do some digital painting as well.
So texturing is basically just putting like the material and the base color onto objects, so we can see, we can make something that looks like a real object instead of just a gray object inside of Maya. So yeah, definitely I find that a lot of people that have painting background gravitate towards texturing, because I think that's the point where you actually putting a lot of detail onto a surface. Maybe we just gravitate towards detail. And also, you know, the color of things and just color material and all those things are just probably I was attracted to when I was into painting as well. So it's kind of like similar kind of things that you're making in a way. That's why I see a lot of painters, they get into texturing. Yeah.
Were there some similarities between the software? Like, did you start with Photoshop?
I would say Photoshop probably is the biggest thing that's similar. But past that, the 3D softwares are super, super different. I guess another thing is the using of brushes. You know, when you're texturing, you do have to actually paint things using brushes. And coming from Photoshop or texturing, painting background, that will probably something you will be have a like a very precise hand, you know, have a steady hand and be very precise with what you are putting onto the textures. That's something that's probably coming from painting as well.
It's just a different canvas.
Yeah.
It's a 3D canvas instead of a flat one. I know that currently, as I mentioned at the beginning, you are working at Blizzard Entertainment, which is, as most people know, a game studio, working on Diablo. But you do also have some history working in film. So you've worked on Ready Player One, Beauty and the Beast, Deadpool, Aquaman. Those are some huge titles. So tell me about your transition into games. Like, do you have a preference, or are you just someone that's like, I'll do whatever as long as I'm making cool stuff?
Most of my career is in film. I only got into game like in the last couple months. So it's very new. I don't think I have enough experience to compare just yet. It's still super new. So far, I'm enjoying it a couple months in. But I think the reason why I chose film in the beginning was because I was really into the realistic style. I find it amazing. Somebody, like when I was a student, I see people that their eyes are so good that they can replicate something that look almost realistic, because that really requires eyes for detail. You need to have really good eyes. I want to be able to do that as well, I think. I think that's why I kind of chose the realistic style. I also liked it. After years though, as an artist, you kind of started to transition, you know. In the beginning, it was more about the challenge of if I can, you know, you practice making personal project to kind of get better at it. And every time you get a little better at it, you feel a little bit, it feels rewarding. But I think as years goes on and you work on all these different projects, slowly you start kind of to gravitate towards other things. Cause so you kind of done it, you know, and the process of doing it is there's enough years that you try different things, you try different methods, and you have a good grasp of how to do it. The challenge is going away a little bit throughout the years, and that's when I started. And the trend of real time is really strong, and I do believe that in the future, if film can use more real time, they will, just because it's just so much cheaper, so much faster, so much more efficient. And that's definitely the bigger trend. So seeing that trend, and also I kind of want to explore a little bit different style. That's why I really started getting into real time and see what I can do, see if I can implement more realistic style into real time. Like we have good enough software now to do that with Substance Painter and maybe some other software and the shader, the PBR shaders that that just started a few years ago. Like many years ago, when we think about game, we don't think about like realistic. We always think, like, especially coming from film, the people have a little bit of a, like, oh, games.
That's a good, that's
it'll
a good
look good.
because I think, like, I remember even like more than 10 years ago when I was in, when I was in college, some games would come out like LA Noire, and we're like, wow, it looks so realistic, but compared to movies, it's still like,
Nothing close
because they had the challenge of having to render it and like having players choose where these characters are going, not just picking one scene and making it absolutely pixel perfect. But it, that's changing now. It's getting closer and closer.
So for me, it was a kind of interesting subject to dive into, to kind of try to make it as realistic as possible for a game, which, you know, people are doing in game already, like Uncharted. Naughty Dog is probably the biggest ones that's doing more realistic style and all that. They're already achieving a really good style, but me personally, I haven't tried it in real time. So for me, it was a personal challenge to kind of try to do that as well, try to learn how to do that. That's why more recent couple years portfolio is all kind of real time related. That's how kind of I got into Blizzard eventually.
Have you found that there are like different challenges now as you, you know, work with this different technology? Are you finding that you're still able to create things at the same level of quality as you have before in film?
To be honest, like the biggest challenge for artists to grow is to get their eyes better and to get a sense of like for the art to get better, get better as an artist in general. To be honest, in terms of software or workflow, it's just a matter of learning. And if you just practice a couple of times on your own projects, you're fine. Like the thing that takes longer time is for your eyes to get better. That
you
can
make
take
it sound so
years.
Easy. Like you just gotta do it a couple of times. No, but it is true. Like if you put time into it,
and especially you have like experience, I guess like general 3D experience also counts, right? Because I've been doing 3D for like let's say 7-8 years before I start to kind of learn more software to gear towards real time. So you already have like a general 3D experience. You have experience of using softwares. So you know, like, in general, how they function. So when you pick up a new thing, you already have all that experience behind you, even though it's new, but it's not really, you know, it's just in a different way. But in terms of like getting your eyes better, that can take years. And you have to very intentionally practice. Because in the studio, when you work a job, doesn't mean you're getting better. Just because you're using software every day doesn't mean you're getting better as an artist. It really depends on what you're doing.
If you're not being challenged in the office.
Yeah, then. And people can stuck, you know, like studio, the safe way to do it is, oh, I know you're good at this, I'm just going to put you on this. For them, that's a safe way to do it, right? There's a guaranteed
result.
I've
done that a lot. I've done it with a lot of my artists in the past. It's like, oh, they're an expert at this.
Yeah.
They're going to keep working on that. Yeah. Because we know they can get it done.
Because it's the safe way for them to go. You have a deadline. You have to handing things to the client. And that's just the safe route. As artists, if you want to get better at something, if you've done the same thing over and over and you're not growing, you kind of have to put in some extra effort on the side to learn something different and then prove to your supervisor, oh, I can also do this. And so they can put you on something else as well.
But it's still hard to make that that jump. Like, have you ever had those conversations with managers in the past where you were stuck in a box and you wanted to do more? Like, how did you approach that with your manager? And did it work?
Normally, probably we'll have like a lead in my department or a soup in my department, and I will... it's pretty casual conversation actually, because you kind of work with them for a little while and you know each other. You probably went to lunch together. So the relationship is less kind of like official, maybe compared to some other industry. You kind of just ask them, oh, do you think if I can do maybe some more characters? Do you think maybe you can give me an opportunity to do some creatures? Depends on, I guess, how long you've been working with this person. If you're still junior, new in the studio, your best bet probably is to kind of show something, to be like, oh, this is a personal project I worked on. I tried to work on, get better at characters. Can you take a look? Give me some critiques. And if you like it, maybe do you think if you have like a minor, maybe smaller character opportunity, you can give me a shot. I think anybody will be very open to requests like that. And in general, my soup and leads, they are very accommodating in general. They all understand. They're artists too. They understand the burden of stocking on one thing for too long. And sometimes you don't even have to ask. I have soup and leads that they're actively trying to switch things around for people because they know. Yeah, they all understand.
That's really nice to have someone who's actually trying to challenge you. I bet that's kind of rare sometimes. But
yeah, for sure.
Do you have any plans in the future to eventually become a manager? Like, is that something you would want? Or do you think you would want to stay on the artist side?
I think I want to stay on more the artist side. I have no ambition in terms of become a manager.
It's not for everyone.
No, I don't think it's for me. I'd rather just do my work. I think the one skill that I wouldn't learn if I don't take a role like that is people skills. You know, I have a general people skill. I can work in a team just fine. But in terms of how to kind of guide people or manage people and try to kind of help them perform their best, it's probably a skill I wouldn't learn if I don't do something like that. Which, you know, mentoring students kind of helps with that as well. You definitely learn how to kind of understand your students and see what their problems are and try to help them and try to kind of communicate in the best way possible to help them because everybody's issue is different.
Every person is different too. I mean, especially at CG Spectrum, there's people all over the world. Canadians or something.
Everybody's situation is so different. Some people are still working on a side job. Some people are full-time students. Some people are a bit older. Some people are a bit younger. It's just all kinds of different backgrounds. Yeah.
I know, at least for me, it's really nice to see and help some of these people take that next step and help them figure out their life. It's not just about school at the end of the day.
For sure.
This is how you're going to make a living. This is how you're going to pay your rent and eat and do this, but hopefully also do something that you kind of like.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to CG Spectrum for helping make this podcast happen.
CG Spectrum is an online animation, VFX, digital painting, and game development school that prepares you for a career in film and games. Whether you're just starting out or you're upgrading your skills, get personalized career training and mentorship from industry pros who have worked on blockbuster films and best-selling games. Courses are 100% online, and you can choose from one-on-one private mentorship options or group classes with just 4 students max. You'll also get access to career support services and join an awesome community full of like-minded creatives just like you. Learn more at cgspectrum.com. We're bringing the industry to you. You're also pretty busy with your YouTube channel, Archerism. You have over 30,000 subscribers on your YouTube channel, and you've posted over 50 videos now with tutorials showing how to do different types of realistic texture painting, modeling, sculpting, lighting. How did that happen? What made you decide to do this? And yeah, just tell me a little bit more about how you started Archerism Digital.
So like before we're talking about like, you know, doing the same thing over and over and maybe feeling like not growing. So I was really feeling that in 2019. I finished my contract at ILM, which is, you know, it's one of the companies I'm sure a lot of people want to work at. It's one of the kind of like career bucket list things. So I've done that, but I still feel like I wasn't growing very much. So that was like a big kind of like, I was like, wow, I worked at this company that I always wanted to work at, but I didn't feel like I was still growing like very much or learning very much. So that's kind of like a wake up call of, you know, that still is up to like me to do. So I was really feeling stagnant at that point. So I actually took a sabbatical and went to Bali for 3 months.
Oh my God, amazing.
It's my Ypres love moment. I've never been there and it's beautiful. And it's nice to kind of just focus on personal projects. So besides traveling, taking a break from work, and it's also kind of just like I have a full plan of starting this YouTube channel. So that was the focus while I was there. And I was mostly looking for growth. I don't know if I fully connect, oh, making YouTube channel is the way to grow. I didn't. It was just a new thing to try, see if I can get something out of it. And also I like I said before, I never really managed anybody. I never had to kind of mentor anyone, well, besides students, that I have this all the way of like method of working that I came up with myself over the years. And I wasn't sure if they actually would make any sense to anybody else besides me. You know, maybe my way is just work for me. And it's, I feel like I had to express it to see feedback. So that's one of the reason why I kind of want to kind of introduce my, maybe how I do things a little bit. And obviously how I do things is also influenced by all the artists I've met before. You know, we learn from each other. So I can't really say, oh, I came up with everything myself. No, definitely not. It's it's all the people I ever work with. All of them obviously contributed to how I do things. And I learned from everybody in the past and put together like something, like a mix of something. And I'll just want to show it to see if actually is any good or it's worth anything, kind of. If it's worth anything, then I will keep making more tutorials to help if it's helpful at all. So in the beginning, it was just like, is it even helpful? Is it even useful? Then I see some feedback. Okay, some people actually do find some help from it, and I'll just keep doing it. It was actually a really good way for me to keep doing personal project. Just feel like I have to do more tutorials. I have to have more content to put on as videos. My ability to finish project went way up. Because before, there's always tons of personal projects on the side, and you finish maybe like 20% of them. Since I started doing YouTube, I actually finished way more because you have this obligation of, okay, I have to get this thing out by this time. And it actually really helped me really finish a lot of more personal projects. And I did feel a lot of growth from it as well, which is what I wanted. It forced me to learn new software. Because I'm trying to teach, make tutorial now, it forced me to patch up some maybe the knowledge holes that I had before that I didn't know. And forced me to expand into different subjects. And forced me to kind of, I always model because I always model for my own personal projects. But this really forced me to have to get better at modeling again, better than what I was doing before. Because I work as a texture artist, you don't model ever. So a lot of people actually forgot how to do it, which I find it's kind of a waste. So it forced me to do work. And I think it forced me to learn a lot of new things. And I think that's probably the kind of that growth, like, outcome that I was looking for. So it was actually a really good experience.
I think it's great that you've been keeping up with that because you don't really have to. It's like, you're successful, right? There's no reason, there's nothing forcing you to do this except for your own personal growth.
Personal growth, it's kind of big, important thing for me. And I also feel like we kind of cannot write our confidence on the title or the studio name. Like we can't. So for me, the thing I know that's like, if I want to feel confident about myself and the thing I can really rely on is my own skill only and my personal skills only. That's the only thing, because that's what I really have. I don't think it's good to, not to criticize anybody that has, but I don't think it's a great thing to kind of like, oh, I work at such a studio. My title is such and such. And so I feel pretty good. You know, like when we were working, like anybody that become an adult had worked in any kind of organization, we all know that title and where you are doesn't equal to how good you really are. Yeah. Not necessarily. When I was a student, I thought, oh, anybody can get into ILM must be amazing artist. You know, anybody getting to such and such studio must be they are at this level. You know, I want to be at the level as well. But that's not really real life.
There's still some great people there, but
no, like, of course, definitely tons.
People who can't find a job for
tons.
A
it's of just reasons. Not a one-to-one kind of relation. It's not a one-to-one thing.
People move,
definitely. You have to get to a certain level to get into a certain studio for sure. But also, it's not a complete one-to-one. For me personally, I don't want to feel like, oh, I'm done. I did this and that and I'm done. Like, I'm good. I can feel good about this for the rest of my life. I feel like one of the basic like human needs is growth. And I feel like, but at the same time, we also turn to get lazy. You know, we have a huge desire for not want to do anything. But I feel like if you like let the lazy side take over and not growing, and after a period of time, you will feel in yourself that something is not great. Even if you're in a good position, you still look for growth.
When do you think that switched for you? Like, was it in 2019? Mm. Like, or was it earlier? Because at first, I'm sure you can relate, like as a student, you're like, I just need a job. Like,
so in the beginning of your career, you definitely feel a lot of growth. First of all, you're learning a lot and you're doing all these new projects. So there's a lot of new things happening. You know, you work as a junior, maybe you do a good job, you become a mid-level artist. That's growth. Maybe you go from like an unknown studio to like a well-known studio. That's growth. You feel accomplished, you know. There's a lot of growth. I think at that point for me, just I know I don't want to go into kind of management position. I don't really want to be a leader soup. But I worked at this point, senior tech show at ILM. In terms of like the typical kind of like names you can climb, you know, like after ILM, like going to any other studio should be easy with the same resume. So it's just that growth kind of stopped there. I think that's why I feel that way after ILM, because it's like in terms of like, where can I go with my career? It will be still fun to work on maybe like a project that I'm super interested in to chase projects. But in terms of like the next studio you can go, it was kind of like plateaued. So I guess that's why I'm kind of looking for some other ways to feel that way, to feel like I'm still growing.
And is that also when you decided to start learning Houdini and like procedural
modeling? Houdini is more of a recent thing this year, actually.
Oh, it's very recent.
Yeah, it's only started from like Christmas last year.
Oh, cool. Something like that. So how's the learning curve? Like from someone who's like more, because I hear from students, like it's so hard when you're just learning, but even if as a professional, it's hard.
And working in 3D, you generally have like two side of things. One is you're more on the artistic side, that's the artists, or you're more on the technical side, which is the TDs, the people that writes the tools, the people that runs the pipeline, you know, you're more technical. So I'm obviously more on the artistic side. I'm like a texture painter. In terms of like 3D abilities, texture painter is probably the, I don't want to downplay all my texture painter friends, but you know, texture painter really is like the most artistic. Like you really don't need too much like technical knowledge to do it. Even like put your work into pipeline, texture painter is probably like the simplest to ingest your work into pipeline. So to try to dive into Houdini was not an easy process. And at this point, I'm busy with something else right now that's not Houdini related. So I haven't actually touched it for the last couple of months, but for the few months that I was spending time on it with my free time, I touched like very, very little. Like I only had an introduction right now.
Right. But I mean, also your standards, I think, are probably a little bit different. Like when I think just an introduction compared to like, you know, what students are learning as an introduction versus, you know, looking at, for example, that gold dress with the beautiful the lace, like
patterns. Yeah.
Patterns, how you created that in Houdini. Like I wouldn't really call that an introduction.
It's just that because my boyfriend works as an environment artist in the industry as well, and he's really, really good at Houdini. So obviously I got a lot of help from him. It's very convenient to have a teacher here. You can just ask a question of. But whenever he showed me something, I just feel like the dumbest person ever. So I guess that's why. Because I have somebody that's like really good at this. And whenever I have a question, ask him to show me something, I'm just like, oh, I have no idea what the hell you were doing. And I have no idea how to replicate what you just showed me. So when you see that and you see what, and then I see what I can do, I'm like, oh my God, there's so much to learn. But I also think that really depends on what you want to do. For him as an environment artist, like Houdini is way more useful for him, just the kind of stuff he has to do. For me, I was mostly want to dig into procedural modeling, so I wouldn't be using all the tools anyways in there. Not all the tools are going to be useful for that purpose. So Houdini wouldn't be like super like a core software for me. It will be like a very useful help kind of thing.
Are there any other artists out there who are doing similar work with procedural texturing that you look up to or that you've gotten
inspiration from? Oh yeah, there's so many.
Give me your top like.
Well, like I work with Chris Nichols is definitely one of the artists I really admire, and I also work with him, like we're actually friends. It's just I know him when I was in school, probably like saw his work and everything. He's one of the really good artists, and it was a good example where he also sculpts, he does everything himself as well, so as a texture artist, so I find that's a good example for me to kind of motivate me to also keep up with that kind of things. Another person is not very well known because she's not really on social media. I know her because of friends of friends. And her name is Trey Ma. She does have an art station, and you see these like beautiful realistic portraits that she made, and her skill level is just like super duper high. But she's one of the artists that her skill level is so high, but she doesn't realize it. You talk to her, she's one of the most humble person ever, but you just look at her work every time, just like, oh my, how the hell did you do that?
That's very common for many artists. I mean, yourself included, people are probably looking up to you. I mean, they are looking up to you. You have 30,000 followers. And you know, you have, you're mentoring people now, but this is something that I talk to a lot of students about, how even some of the most amazing artists in the world, they know that there are like you said, I asked you to name two, but you're like, there's so many that you could name. There's so many.
Oh yeah, there's so many.
And it never really ends. Even if you went to the top of that list, and if you talked to that woman and asked her, what are your favorite people? She could probably name 10 more, and it keeps going. There's always going to be someone better than you. Always.
For sure. And I think that comes back to the growth subject. It's like for us, like sometimes we think, oh, if I get this job, I'll be happy. Or if I do achieve this, I'll be happy. Or get this award, I'll be happy. To be honest, I feel like it's really about growth. Like if you feel like you always keep growing and challenging yourself and learning new things, I think that's what's really making you happy. So it doesn't matter where you are, you're still looking for the next kind of where you can go from there. So it's not a like finish line. I think people are looking for, it's more just like, always feel like you're progressing, because we're getting older like that. We cannot stop that. Time is passing by. We're getting older. We're going to die one day. Not to make this morbid.
It's true. We all have the same 24 hours in a day.
It's true. And if we don't want to think about it, it's happening. Even if you don't want to think about it. So I feel like maybe on some level in the back of our mind, we all know that. And that's why growth is so give you joy, because as time goes by, you want to feel like you accomplished more things and done more things, and you know, because there's a limit of it, how much you can do.
Speaking of growth, because you have so many great examples here, what are some sort of tips that you would give on making goals for your portfolio, or some suggestions you have for anyone watching, anyone listening, students, or even professional artists? What do you suggest that they do to sort of keep that growth moving?
For students, I tell all of any student that we ever talk about this subject, is that the more you know what you want to do, the easier it is for you to create your portfolio. If you can narrow it down, exactly which kind of style or studio, which job you're aiming for, then you tailor your portfolio towards that, and you have the highest chance of getting that job. It's just so broad. You know, we're doing 3D with 3D artists, but there's so many things in there. Are you an architectural design? Are you like a commercial kind of like a graphic design? Are you motion graphic? Are you animation? Are you in game, real time, VR, film? There's so many things, and you cannot make a portfolio that satisfies all of that. It's just impossible. Mm-hmm. And also the kind of like skill set you have to develop for them is slightly different. They share a lot of general things, but it also gets different. And if you want to get better, it's better to focus your energy on practice one thing and make it really good so you can get a job. You don't have the energy to practice everything and make everything good. That's going to take years.
And it just kind of looks messy in a portfolio too, because you're like, what is this person trying to do? Each piece might be good on its own, but it's difficult to tell like who this artist is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If your goal really is to get a job, set a very clear go of which job. And it's not set in life. Once you get a job, you start to make a living, you can always change later. You know, it's not like once you chose, like, that's it, you're done, your whole life you're doing this. Like, it's not that serious. You know, I think that's the first separation is, do you want to do something that's real time or rendered? So rendered is animation and film, and real time is game or any kind of VR, AR related things. So separate that out first. And then you say, oh, I want to go into game, and I really like this studio. That's exactly the kind of style I want to go for. for this particular game, then you should just tailor-make your portfolio towards that. Even if you cannot get into that exact studio, that exact project, there are projects out there that's similar. I would say, and also if you make personal project, post them online, post them on LinkedIn. Even if you don't get many likes in the beginning or it is not much of a reaction, you never know who is going to see it. There's so many different kind of skill level, like where people have different years of working experience and different skill level is going to fit different kind of jobs. So it's not like you have to make that perfect portfolio piece, like the artist you admire, to worthy of a job. It's not like that. It's a very different level. So whatever level you're at, definitely post them and you never know what's going to come up. I wasn't actively looking for a game job, but Blizzard find me because I was posting my work. So you never know what's going to come up.
Tell me a little bit more about that process of Blizzard finding you and like how they reached out to you.
It was LinkedIn, actually.
It was all on LinkedIn.
It's probably because I was posting on LinkedIn on my work and it's LinkedIn.
And it was like a recruiter that reached out to you.
It was actually the art director of the game. The new Diablo is going for a little bit more realistic style. It wasn't intentional for any project, but it was just that I was trying to do that with real time for all my personal projects. So they saw it was a good fit.
The rest is just, Tell me a little bit more about maybe some personality tips, because we talked about things that you should post. We talked about growth with your own personal work. And I know that you said that, you know, people skills aren't always like, it's not necessarily your strength. You don't necessarily want to manage people, but obviously people skills are still important. So how has that helped you over the years with your jobs and getting new work, working with people?
Taking critiques with a good attitude is super important because that's what your job is. Somebody's going to critique it and tell you what to fix. And you have to be able to accept the critique and just do what client needs you to do. And also, being a team player, because I have worked with like 85% of the guys I ever worked with are amazing. I made a lot of friends in the industry and I really enjoy working with them. But from time to time, you meet someone that's like hard to work with for sure. And the biggest downfall of that is this is a small industry. We all know each other. We're all friends. And so if somebody was hard to work with, it spreads real fast. And all of a sudden, the other 20 guys also know about it. So definitely be very careful, be easy to work with, just be a nice person in general, and don't kind of have an ego, be humble about everything.
Even though these studios are so big and the industry feels very big.
It's not very big. Like,
you get 10 people going for lunch and like,
I work only in Vancouver, but I know like a lot of my coworkers, they work in New Zealand together. And now all of a sudden they're in Vancouver together. And all of a sudden they're in London together. It feels like there's a lot of country in it, but there's really a small group of people that just keep running into each other. So if you have a bad reputation, that spreads really fast. So it's just good to be accommodating with everyone and just be a nice person work while you work with everyone.
I mean, and that's just a life skill.
Yeah.
Yes, we're talking about the industry, but I mean, that goes for anyone. And I think not even artist roles, but even production management roles or, you know, all of these people involved, I think just generally in life, we need to be nice people. Yeah. There's so many bad things happening in the world. Like it just seems like such a waste of energy to do it any other way. But as you said, those people exist. We've all worked with them. We don't have to name any names because everyone's worked with someone like that. So yeah, you just don't want to be one of those people who's known as difficult or known as angry or like not nice or doesn't know how to talk to people because that stuff will stick with you forever. You know, I still to this day, you know, if I haven't looked for a job for a while, but like last time I did or any time I meet someone new or even trying to bring new mentors into CG Spectrum, you know, I'll talk to other people. Like, what was your experience with them? Because I don't want to recommend someone or I don't want to work with someone who has a history of that. even if it was a long time ago. Like someone could tell me, oh yeah, I worked with them 5 years ago and this happened. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to second guess that person now.
Even Trump's artistic skill sometimes. Because you're working in a team, you just really don't want to drag the whole team down with like a bad, like environment, negative environment.
Yeah. Mm. Plus, it's especially as you move up in different levels, I think as a junior, it's more about like, show me your portfolio. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the references that you give as a junior are not really relevant anyway. It's just like last job that you had, like at a restaurant or something. And so people don't really, they just want to make sure, like, did they show up to work every day? Were there any like major red flags? No. Okay. But later, I think the more you move up in a role, it's like they know what your work is. They've seen your demo reel or they've seen your credits of stuff that you've worked on. They're not worried about your technical or creative skill. Like, we trust that already. You've worked on this, this, and that. You're good. But we can't bring someone on our team that's going to, like you said, like bring the vibe down or make it difficult.
Production can get stressful. There's already a problem within production to begin with. You know, you're always running into new problems. You have to meet client deadlines, and there's technical problems when we're like using computer to work. You know, there's already tons of problems. You want to have energy to focus on that instead of interpersonal issues.
Last but not least, as you look to the future, because you're someone, you're talking about growth this whole time. So what is next for you? Because I know that you probably have a plan now. So what trends do you see in the future? And what are some things that you're excited about or some things that you think some other people should get into?
For me, I just started this new game job. So for me right now, I'm just still in the learning period. It's everything is brand new to me. I want to see what I can do. And obviously, I want to learn as much as possible. There's a whole area of new things now that I can learn. I am in the back of my head thinking about like maybe some bigger personal project I can take on. I have been pretty slow with my YouTube channel because I kind of feel like I was getting repetitive. I was looking for variety in making different projects, but and the basic concept is the same. I kind of feel like we're just talking about the same thing over and over. That's why I've been very slow with it. Maybe with this new job, I learned something new. I have something new to contribute, and that will kind of create more things. But in terms of like the general trend, it's definitely there's a huge real-time trend. Mm-hmm. I would encourage anyone to kind of definitely get into that more. Real time just so much cheaper if you don't have to render. If any time this technology is ready, those studios will want to transition as soon as possible, I'm sure. It's just so much cheaper. You probably can create so much more content. And also there's so much more independent content because of Unreal Engine too now.
It's more
people
accessible.
Are trying to do their, people can make their own game, any kind of game they like. People can make their even own animation. People is going to want to make their own film in it, like for sure. So that's definitely something that's coming.
Plus, I think there's now a bigger crossover into the film industry. Like traditionally, real time was very separate and like that's for games, rendering is for film.
Because,
but now we're seeing film like pulling over games people, and that more of them are looking. Every single studio I've talked to recently is asking for people who know Unreal. Like every single one.
Pretty much.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. The technology is good enough now to kind of the difference is like getting smaller and smaller.
You know, you mentioned your YouTube channel and that you're like, oh, I feel like it's getting repetitive. Do you start to plan new projects based on things that are popular? Like what are some of your most popular videos?
I think the most popular video was one where I used Substance Painter to texture a female face. I think that was the most popular one, but I don't want to, we have 3D channels that have like few hundred thousand followers and millions, you know, like Blender grew. But for me personally, I don't really want to build the same sort of channel. I don't want to build whatever is popular. And I kind of don't want to do, you know, like, oh, whatever IP is popular right now, that's a Stranger Things popular right now, do something like according to like about Stranger Things. If you're a full-time YouTuber, that's what you make to make money. Like you kind of have to
Because you go
do that.
For the hits. Yeah.
You need the views because, you know, that's how you make your money. But for me, I kind of don't want to do that. I kind of want to talk more about, it sounds a little bit more selfish, but I kind of want to talk about things that I find interesting. If I discover some new workflow, I find it's really interesting. I want to share that. Or I just don't think I have the patience to do what's the most common like popular thing right now if I'm not into it myself as an artist.
I guess from what I've learned from you, learning more about emerging technology, researching, and, you know, personal growth, trying to figure out what's happening on the inside. Like, do you get any information from the studios themselves? Like, are you learning from your peers or other departments within the studios?
Yeah, always with peers. Yeah, that's the biggest resource you learn from is from your coworkers. It's getting a little more difficult now because working from home, you don't really see what they're doing anymore now. It's not like before, you can pass by somebody's monitor and see something interesting. You can ask them, hey, what are you working on?
Yeah.
It's not so easy anymore now. So that makes it a little bit more difficult. But still, you know, whenever I run into an issue, I can still, you know, jump into a Zoom chat with someone just to figure some issue out. You can still learn like that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely your coworker is one of the biggest resource if you want to, because everybody works in such a different way. You can always get like a good tip of how they do things and kind of inspire you to different ways to solve your own problems, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips for how to actually reach out to people online, like in these, like, you know, Slack or Teams or Discord networks? Because it is different. Like, I'm used to the studio thing myself of you walk by someone's monitor, like, oh, that's cool. What did you do? Or you sit on dailies and you see other people's stuff. So how do you approach this now at a new studio that you just started working at? It's totally online. So how are you trying to get that information now?
I think I follow certain channels on YouTube and I follow certain artists on Instagram and I follow people on LinkedIn. Just follow the people that you think is doing interesting things. They will post what they are doing and what they are working on. And sometimes like the whole Midjourney AIR thing, you know, it will pop up on your feed if somebody discovers something interesting and they're posting about it. And people are always posting their own work as well. And like sometimes those work maybe involve some more interesting techniques. Maybe sometimes you'll be like, oh, I have no idea how they made that. You kind of get information that way.
And what about like in the studio? Like, how do you approach reaching out to people internally now?
In the studio, I think always, like, when I was in, like, film, there's always, like, a texture artist group or, like, just, like, an asset artist group. So they try to create kind of online groups like that where you can get involved and see what other people are doing.
Yeah, I mean, online communities are so important to have and to have other people to talk to. It's so difficult. That's one of the things I've struggled with. Since the pandemic is not having those people every day that you bump into, getting coffee at the office that you could tell, oh, what are you working on now? Or how's that shot going? Or, so I miss that, but it's important that we still try to find other ways to communicate people and bring them together. Speaking of which, where can we find you online?
Definitely the YouTube channel, Archivist Digital. I haven't been very active. Otherwise, I have Archivist Digital Instagram. And also I have LinkedIn, just Chun Chun Yan. I always post on LinkedIn, like anything new. I always post there. So, and anyone, you know, like having a full LinkedIn profile is important. So many jobs, opportunities, it's all through LinkedIn now. I feel like it's probably way more than before. So having a full LinkedIn profile with your resume attached, with your portfolio attached, and if you have any artwork, definitely post on LinkedIn. I find that's a very useful platform.
I agree. I use it all the time. and also your ArtStation. That's how I
find it. Oh, yeah, ArtStation. Forgot about that one.
which is also Chun Chun Yang at ArtStation. Well, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure talking to you. And you gave us so many amazing tips. And I can't wait to see what else you get up to and what's next in your career. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. For more on this episode, visit us at cgspectrum.com/podcast. Check out our show notes where you'll find links to our guests and more behind the scenes. And if you're enjoying the show, please like, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening, or share this episode with someone who might like it. See you next time.